In 1 Enoch 19, it actually says that, the watchers have the ability to change form. It just says that point blank. What's really interesting in the, let's talk about Genesis 3 a little bit. Of course, this is the Garden of Eden. I do not think this was a snake, by the way. The word is nachash in Hebrew. It's a very generic, very common term. It can be a noun, a verb, or an adjective. If it's a noun, there you say it would be translated the serpent. If it's a verb, it would be the deceiver. Okay, you see the action of deceiving, the verb.
Like the devil?
Right. If it's an adjective, it just means the shining one. Okay, you're talking about some luminous being.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that is actually paralleled by two other passages we don't need to get into. But in the Mesopotamian version, there is no fall account in Mesopotamia. But if you remember the garden story, the Nakash, the shining one, I'll call him, the serpent, deceives Adam and Eve. They fall and they lose immortality. In the Mesopotamian literature, there's a story where Gilgamesh, it happens to be Gilgamesh again, back to him, he is pursuing immortality, and he finds this plant. He's directed to this, that this will give you eternal life, and he gets it, and he sort of takes a nap, puts his guard down, and a serpent comes along, a serpent, and eats it and steals his immortality. Now, in that account, the Akkadian term is literally, if you translate it literally, earth lion, which you think, boy, that's really odd. But that is exactly the term in Greek for the chameleon.
Hmm.
It's chameleon in Greek. Kamai is to, you know, be on the earth, and leon is lion, so earth lion. That implies, now I'm not saying it states, but it implies in the Mesopotamian story that you might have some sort of chameleonic, if that's a word, being. Now, if you take that to Genesis 3, if this is a divine being, and that's my position, that this isn't just a snake crawling around, then he could be one of the class. I mean, there are arguments for this that I could, you know, that academics argue about and construct. He could be of the class of the sons of God, and that would mean he is a changeling.
What if they weren't serpents, or Michael, or whatever they might have been? What if they were reptilian in nature?
Well, I think that is what you're dealing with. I think there are certain indications, not only in the Hebrew Bible, but again in other Jewish literature, where definitely in Genesis 3, you have a serpentine being, even if it's I believe this is a being, this is a person, an upright person. I mean, have
something,
you ever wondered
something
why
physical? Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever wondered why Eve isn't surprised that this thing talks to her?
Right.
And, you know, Eden. Again, listeners can go up on my website. I have essentially papers and documents and all this.
You have volumes of stuff on this.
Yeah. I mean, they can look for the argument, the evidence for this, but essentially Eden is where the divine council meets. And the divine council, of course, composed of the sons of God, the angels, and the whole array. My own view is that since Eden is where the council meets, Eve and Adam certainly sees these guys come and go all the time. And they're not surprised because they are beings. They're luminous. They seem to have some sort of, again, serpentine appearance. They're intelligent. They can speak. You know, even when they're cursed, people say, well, what about the curse? You know, crawl on your belly and so on and so forth. You can see if you read the text that the curse is metaphorical because it says, you'll crawl on your belly and you'll eat dirt the rest of your life. Well, no snakes eat dirt. Okay, I mean, this is talking about some sort of other punishment. People want to find out, they can go to my site.
Right, right.
But you have, again, these beings. Now, everyone has pretty much, if you've ever been in church and sung Holy, 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 you know that song about this, the vision of Isaiah in chapter 6, God's on his throne and the seraphim are flying around. Seraphim is usually considered to mean burning ones from the Hebrew verb saraf, and that could be perfectly legitimate. But there's another saraf in the Hebrew Bible that means serpent. In the story of Moses, the serpent in the wilderness, people can go look this up. When the serpents are biting people, and God says, "Hey, make a brass serpent, put it on a pole. People see that, they'll be healed, so on and so forth." That word is seraph. It's the same one. In Egypt, it's the same thing, seraph. and it means a reptilian being. So, I mean, you could have, as part of the council world, the council hierarchy, the heavenly host, there are some beings that are apparently serpentine in appearance.
See, David Icke believes that these reptilians have been the, basically, the Illuminati, the leaders of world governments since the beginning of time, here.
Yeah, I don't imbibe a lot of what David Icke says, but I will say this. If you understand serpentine motifs in terms of a watcher, what I'll call a watcher paradigm, all that means is that you are espousing very biblical ideas, that there was a fall, there was a deliberate attempt to destroy humanity by one of these beings. When the Nakash is cursed, he says, God says, I'm going to put an adversarial relationship between your seed and the seed of the woman. Now, the seed of the woman in biblical theology is, first of all, humanity, because it's Eve. And second of all, it's the Messiah, the ultimate seed. When the New Testament refers back to this event, it often speaks of the Messiah, the ultimate, you know, human person here that's going to, you know, be God incarnate. If that's your operating paradigm, then the sons of God, it's very natural to see them as the seed, in some sense, of the Nakash. As Jesus would say, you're like your father, the devil. And so, taking it from that point, you go to Enoch and a few other places in the Old Testament, and you get this worldview of these beings coming down, deliberately trying to pollute, as Jubilees says, pollute the line, pollute humanity, and dispensing technology and saying, we will give you this if you acknowledge us as your gods. And we haven't even gotten to Deuteronomy, the book of Deuteronomy. There was an event after the Tower of Babel where God makes a decision, and he says, and this is Deuteronomy 32, verses 8 and 9. He says, essentially, I'm just tired of this. We had the flood. You know, you didn't do what I wanted you to do there, mm-hmm. disperse and populate the world. Here you are building this tower. So what we have to do is divide you up. And it says, when the Most High divided up the nations, he divided them up according to the number of the sons of God. Now, most Bibles will say according to the number of the sons of Israel. But Israel didn't even exist at this time. This is Genesis 11. And there are other versions of the Old Testament. Dead Sea Scrolls are one of them, who say sons of God at that. There's a different reading there. So God divides up the nations according to the number of the sons of God. Deuteronomy 4 says the same thing, so that the textual issue doesn't really matter. So that the nations, other than Israel, are controlled. God essentially just gives them up. So, you know, you want to worship these flunkies, you want to worship the watchers, you know, back in Genesis 6, fine. Go ahead, do that. I'm going to just essentially give you what you want. And for the rest of the story of the Old Testament, it's the nations being dominated by territorial entities,